At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, folks. How are you? You join me from Glasgow after I've just hosted the BAFTA Scotland Awards. So it feels apt that I'm bringing you this brand new episode. First up, huge congratulations to all the winners tonight, also all the nominees. An amazing night celebrating all the work behind the camera and in front of the camera across film and TV in Scotland. And so it's a Frankenstein special on our latest episode of Soundtracking, which was filmed partly in Aberdeenshire, Glasgow and Edinburgh. First up, Guillermo del Toro, the director, and then composer Alexandre Desplat join us to discuss their collaboration on the Netflix reimagining. Starring Oscar Isaac, Jacob Elordi, Mia Goth and Christoph Waltz, Frankenstein is a beautiful interpretation of the classic tale brought to life by Guillermo's characteristic stylistic flair. It is a film that has been something he's been desperate to make for so long, as you'll hear him talk about in our conversation. There's something beautifully childlike about Guillermo and his enthusiasm for his craft, and I really find that so inspiring. Like, it's infectious how much he loves what he does and the joy that he gets out of what he does. And you can hear that in his voice. First up then, Guillermo, and we'll begin with a title cue by the man who follows him, Alexandre Desplat. Congratulations on this film.
Thank you.
Last time we spoke was at the wonderful Abbey Road. I don't know if you remember. We celebrated Pinocchio with Alexander.
That was a great day.
Oh, wasn't it great? What a luxury to have that opportunity.
I think it is. Mm. That to me is like attending a Paganini concert, right?
His enthusiasm for his craft is infectious, as is yours.
And it's very intimate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but both those stories, this one and Pinocchio, for you, there's a thread. There's kind of connective
it's
tissue.
It's two sides of the same story. It's two, what I jokingly call it, a prodigal father story. It's not the son that comes to the father, but the father that comes to the son and says, I now know what I did wrong. Doesn't happen in real life.
If only.
If only. We would all be much better adapted, you know, but you know, both are born out of my dad and I and me and my kids. You know, they both have a little bit of regret, a little bit of daydreaming, of saying, what if you listen to your kids?
Yeah.
Which is a big what if. I mean, if the tragedy of mankind is that we have not, in all those years of history, we have not raised a single generation right. Some people, yes, some people, no. But this is how bad we are at being human.
We never learn.
We never learn. We never, I mean, when people talk about we should teach AI to fabricate emotions, teach your kids.
Yeah.
That's the best AI you have. Yeah. Why don't you goddamn use it?
Yeah. When did you first fall in love with this story and these characters? Can you remember the moment?
Yeah. When I was 7, I saw the movie with James Whale, fell in love with Boris Karloff. When I was 11, I read the book, and I fell in love with Mary Shelley and the book, both.
Yeah.
Some people have crushes on Farrah Fawcett. I had a crush on Mary Shelley and the Brontes. I was like, if I had a time machine, I would party like it's 1999.
I love that so much.
Oh, I would say, hi, is Emily home? No. What about Charlotte?
Oh, that's so great. I have a great image in my head now of that.
I would bring flowers.
Yeah. The emotion in this film is extraordinary. I was not, I kind of really tried to not read too much or know too much going into it, so I can really experience what you intended. Mm-hmm. And the emotion was incredible, particularly for the monster, who I don't see as a monster at all. You know, I see him as a child. I see him as a child kind of looking for connection.
That's what he is.
And love.
He's a creature.
A creature, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at some point or another in the book, he's called everything from demon to Adam. And I think he's Adam. I mean, really, if you watch carefully the process of creation and the moment he's created in, you know, basically it's a Paradise Lost. Mm. Is really the fall from grace, the unwanted moment of birth, you know? But I do think that the challenge for me was not to adapt in a sort of sheepish way, but to revive the emotional core of that book, which is, frankly, the story of the creature. And most people never get to that part or get to it in a way that I think allowed me to still make this movie relevant. For me, it's a he said, she said, you know, and that's beautiful in the book. And to see people weeping at the end of a movie for basically a narrative line that was invented by a teenager 200 years ago is really rewarding. Hmm.
Did you know how you wanted the music to sit with this, you know, in terms of this wonderful collaboration that you've had over a number of films with Alexander? Did you know what that...
You know what happened? What happens with Alexander is really magical, because I have a whole notion of the movie, and then he says, with the music, no, you're wrong. So let us go this other way. And he really, really is the only collaborator that makes me actually change course. Everybody else, you know, I kind of know where we're going, and we go half a block away, two doors down, but we never change. Alexander says, no, let's go to the other side of the city. And he tells me, you know, I wanted Baroque music.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, the tuning is too alien. It's very different from contemporary music. We got to tune the instruments differently. It's going to sound like an artifact. He says, give me a shot at the opera. Because I said the sets are like opera sets.
Yeah.
And he said, well, give me a chance at making a huge symphony and a little duet. And he said, we have to get the most delicate violinist for the violin solo of the creature. And we hired this wonderful Nordic violinist that had a Stradivarius. And the solos of the creature are done by a real, bona fide Stradivarius.
Wow. Thank you. the emotion in that is
yeah, and the way she, that instrument was directable, because it is the theme when Victor shows him the sun for the same first time, you hear that solo, and I said, this is magical. Mm-hmm. And she played one way. And then at the end, I said, no, this is acceptance. And she played a different way. And everybody in the recording room, we were looking at each other going, what is happening here? She was like an actor.
Amazing for you know, someone who's made, told us as many stories as you have, you know, to still be surprised.
And, every day.
And, yeah.
Every day. I mean, I'm really grateful every day. This sounds like a line. It isn't. First of all, I'm grateful for the free food. Free drinks.
I'm the trips to Edinburgh.
Free trips to Edinburgh. That is a nibs for everyone. Haggis. No, you know, I really am, because I have found a profession that allows me to play with other deranged kids
yeah. In
a way that makes sense somehow as a business. So I get to listen to Alexander Desplat play. I get to see Kate Hawley design the wardrobes. I get to see miniatures blowing apart. This is a master plan from a 10-year-old.
Living the dream.
Can I blow up a miniature, Mom? We don't have the money, child. Oh. Can I blow up the tower? Sure. Yeah. It's great.
It was so important to you to have, you know, these sets.
Physical,
living yeah. And breathing in a way.
A full-size ship
wow.
on motors to rocket. So when Jacob pushes the ship, he's pushing the ship.
Wow.
He's not pushing a digital piece of green foam.
Yeah.
You know, he's pushing the ship.
Well, it's because all the other supportive cast can react to that genuinely, can't
yeah.
they? That's the thing, is they can, they're feeling it, you know. So we get to feel it,
and you get the physics, you get the real interaction. Like when we did Nightmare Alley, I remember we built the carnival in a real field because we noticed that the wind made the tents breathe.
Huh.
And if we shot it inside of a studio, you would have just the tents like that.
Yeah.
And they felt like giant hearts. And I said, we're shooting this in the real place, you know?
I loved as well hearing you talk about Oscar's character, and you wanted him to be more rock star than scientist.
Yeah.
I love that kind of,
yeah.
that sort of approach to him.
And the wardrobe is designed to look like a Bohemian Soho 1968.
Mm.
Where you would see the Stones cross the street with flare pants and high heels in the boots and the sideways fedora, you know?
Yeah.
And the frills and, you know, and the romantic crushed velvet,
mm-hmm.
you know? So he is dressed like that. He's dressed like Keith Richards or, you know, Mick Jagger. And he behaved like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, not just the costume, but
no.
the whole personality.
The way
he
presents, the way he talks, the arrogance, the seductiveness.
Yeah.
You know?
The, almost the kind of like the arrogance to how she's going to feel about him as well. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like.
She must feel like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why don't you?
Yeah.
Why not me? Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's almost like his biggest regret, isn't it?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
she doesn't reciprocate that kind of feeling
yeah.
that he has for her.
Well, and she likes his son. Why? Why not me? It's like Julio Iglesias resenting Enrique Iglesias. Hey, you're getting a lot more action than me. So remember that. This Frankenstein includes Julio Iglesias.
Oh, my God. That's the best thing ever.
That is a nibs on Julio Iglesias in the same conversation. How can we top that?
This is like crazy. This is the best day ever. What do you want people to take away from this? Because I love, you know, I remember going to see in a little theatre in St. Andrews called the Byer Theatre, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein when
yeah.
I was at school. And
I think that what's wonderful is the interpretations that these characters have had over time.
Yeah.
But this feels there were certain elements that were incredibly important for you to either readdress or focus mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. And I think people will be really moved by what the choices that you've made. But I always wondered what you want people to come away with.
The importance of forgiveness and acceptance, which I think that is a good thing to do. And we are in a world where that is so fast. And what people call information is really emotion.
Yeah.
They say, oh, we process a lot of information through the net. No, we process emotion. We don't. I think we are deranged. I don't think we're going to get deranged. I don't think we are fully deranged. We are a ship full of fools and madmen heading for the cataracts. So the only way we can avoid that horrible moment where we go, hey, you know, is if we start regarding each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not that the movies do that. I mean, Steve Soderbergh said once, if the entire canon of Shakespeare hasn't made humanity one iota better, what am I troubling myself with, right? Well, the answer is you still have to warn in any way you can the urgency of emotion and the urgency of feeling in a time where actually that is the new punk. People are afraid of emotion. People scorn, and it is much easier to be ironic, to be detached, and to be cool than to be human. So, you know, that's what I think, I hope people take.
Oh, Guillermo, so lovely to chat to you.
Hey, same here.
Thank you so much.
So happy to see you again.
Score to Frankenstein. That's Victor's Tale by Alexander Desplat, rounding off the first part of our soundtrack and special with Guillermo del Toro. Next up, Alexander Desplat, who I was delighted to finally get to hang out with in person after we last spoke from his holiday in Greece. And we're going to kick off the conversation with his cue, Victor in Love.
Here we are in person. Yes. Not with bad reception. It's great to chat to you. Congratulations on this wonderful collaboration once again with Guillermo. And I was just reminded of when we spoke about Pinocchio at that incredible event at Abbey Road. Do you remember? That so special.
Yeah, with an orchestra and a singer, yeah.
It was so special. And I hadn't realised until chatting to Guillermo about almost the connective tissue that he says there is between Pinocchio and Frankenstein in terms of that idea of two sides of the same coin almost.
But even with, I think it's a triptych, even with Shape of Water starting. First creature, Pinocchio creature, and this one, the ultimate creature. To me, it's a triptych. It's the end of a movement.
Do you think about that when you're thinking about music or not?
No, not really. No, I took every story differently. This one being the more romantic.
Yeah.
You know, the first one was Impossible Love. The second was Father and Son. More than Frankenstein is also Father and Son, but with a huge romantic, operatic vision of it.
I love how Guillermo says that you're the only person or collaborator that he works with that is probably the most honest, and he will take on board when you say no. And you did that because he came up with, he had an idea of what he thought the music needed to be for this. Tell me a little bit about what he initially intended and why you felt it wasn't right.
Well, at first we worked really early on in the process, 2 years ago, before he shot. And I wrote several lullabies and waltzes, and some of the waltzes were kept for the source music, you know, when they dance, you know, in the ballroom in the film. And then he had the idea of maybe having Baroque music, because there is something Baroque about all these costumes, the production design, these castles. We can call it Gothic, but he would call it Baroque. So, but Baroque music, to me, is really something of an era and the type of instrumentation, and I couldn't make it fit in. I kept ideas of that, like there's a harpsichord at times, but it's not at the front. It's not playing like, you know, like you would hear in a Baroque orchestration. And but also the way sometimes the notation appears in Baroque music, you know, there's the line and then the notation that the player would improvise and develop. And so I kept a bit of that in here and there, but that's about what remained. And I said, no Baroque music.
But it's that kind of thing where you feel it. You know what works. You know what...
You know, it's a strange feeling. Because I'm the last one to watch the film, I haven't been through the process of hating a scene or struggling with a scene. He has that for many, many years, and dreaming of a film that is its own beast.
Yeah.
The film becomes an object that you've dreamed of, but it's not what exactly you've dreamed of. And I come here at the last minute, and I intuitively and intellectually receive what the movie is at that point. And I try to make it even better, more beautiful, more scary, more whatever emotion, but bring all these emotions in a better way, you know, convey them in a more direct way sometimes for the audience also. And understanding of the characters or empathy with the characters, which is very important in this film.
Yeah.
Because all these characters are in love with something or someone or in search of love. And the creature in itself is really the center of it. And if the audience can have empathy for this creature, then the movie is spot on, you know.
Did you have a relationship with the story prior to working on it?
I had read Mary Shelley when I was a teenager. I did not reread it. Mm. Reread? Yeah. Mm. And I did not see any Frankenstein movies before this one. It's very strange. I've seen hundreds of silent movies, of movies of the 20s, 30s, you know, black and white, but I know for some reason I skipped those.
Yeah.
So now is a good time for me to rewind.
Yeah, once you've done the music, now you can go back and
see them.
Watch. Yeah.
Of course, I know the image of, you know, Boris Karloff with the screws, but that's about all I knew about Frankenstein on film.
I love Guillermo's interpretation of the story and the structure that he's given it, and also the changes that he's made to the story that are true for his interpretation of that. They kind of really work.
And he's closer to Mary Shelley's somehow.
Yeah.
And of course, when a director like Guillermo takes a project, he has such a strong vision. Not only that, because he's been dreaming of this film forever, but also his artistic vision is so varied and rich, and his knowledge of art, of visual arts, of painting, of literature is so wide that everything kind of flows into the project. And So it makes it really a project, a unique project,
yeah.
and which is offered to me to, you know, with so much space for the music to talk.
It's all the craft and the detail in there, mm-hmm. as well, you know, mm-hmm. and that idea that these sets are, he wants people painting and building and, you know, and woodwork and all those kind of tangible things to, so these worlds can feel as true and as honest as possible. And that also reflects in the music, and the violin mm-hmm. is, it speaks to you.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I suggested we have a violin solo, because this huge creature, so strong, you know, that nothing can stop, that can't die, that they can break anything with his hands, needed something that, again, the audience could share. If the music would have been bombastic and
yeah.
violent, well, it's already on screen. Let's go and get what's inside him and his, you know, his pain and his suffering and his despair. And the violin was, I think, perfect, because it can be extremely thin and delicate and also a bit more lyrical. And I was lucky to find this wonderful player, Norwegian player, Elbjørg Hemsing, because she has that sound. Some violinists are very expressive, or, you know, they're very, very romantic, and she doesn't play like that.
Yeah.
She plays with much more restraint, and sometimes this restraint is more emotional than the more is more.
Conversations that you had with her about how she played and how she approached certain things. That's amazing to think about.
The interpretation, you know, is like actors. Interpretation is something that is part of the music. If my music is played wrongly, it's not that good. It has to be played spot on.
It's such an interesting kind of thought, and I think something we take for granted in terms of the players that are behind the music that you create. And sometimes it is about finding those unique, special players within the bigger sort of frame of an orchestra. With someone like that, how do you find her, and how do you kind of, I guess, audition her?
We have the same agent, and I went on the site of the agent, and I listened to several violinists. Some others I knew from other countries and things, and I just heard her sound, and it reminded me of the sound of violin of my wife, who can't play anymore. And when I met her, I heard a sound that was so pure, with a bow which is extremely precise and emotional, and she plays like that. So I was happy to find that.
Oh, wow, that's a lovely, beautiful personal connection.
But we also had great cello moments in the film. He was not as a soloist, but he was the principal, and he's got many, many scenes where he's also Tim Gill, who's here in London, and he was also I need to pay a tribute to him too.
There's also a couple of cues that I wanted to talk about as well, specifically, you know, that idea that you were talking about something that may be perceived as being gratuitous and contradicting that almost with things, but the cue with the dissection, there's a kind of almost like a joyfulness and a kind of childlikeness almost quality to it as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Well, there again, when you score a film, you have to make choices. Silence, big, restrained, serious, following the action. And this scene is so gory, you know. You see body parts being chopped and
sawed.
But that's not what is interesting. What is interesting is what he, the character, Victor Frankenstein, the doctor, is experiencing. He's in this creative mood that I know very well when I compose, where I'm in a trance, when I'm, you know, I'm starting to find what I'm looking for, and I write as fast as I can and with the most passion that I can, and you lose all contact with the world. And that's what he's experiencing at that moment. So it was more interesting to show what he feels, how he feels, and transmit that to the audience. I wrote a waltz which is full of joy, following the action still, which is also something interesting when you when you can do that. It's not just a song that you throw to the film, a nice song. No, it's tailored to what he's doing. There's a moment, I remember, that was always making me laugh when I was writing it. It's when he's pushing blocks of ice, and there's a switch there in the music, and it just made me laugh that we could have pleasure watching this horrible scene.
Yeah. And I wondered as well, that idea that Guillermo wanted Oscar's Victor to be more kind of rock star than scientist in a way, and whether that fed into how and what you wrote.
Yeah, well. Because you always see in movies a scientist, he has these little round glasses and his strange looks and a bit boring and serious, or a blouse or whatever it is, and an apron. But no, he's dressed as a rock star, or as the main role of a theatre play, and he's playing a role. He's just achieving what he's been dreaming of, which is creating something that never has been done before, like any artist wants to do, any sculptor, any painter. He wants to do something that nobody has done before. It's hard to get there, but, you know, sometimes
you can. Know how that feels.
It's hard. It's pretty hard.
And then also the cue when the creature comes alive, you know, in terms of how you would score that, and how that's really interesting as well. And
but there again, you could play it in a scary way, because you see this giant, because Jacob Elordi is a giant.
Yeah.
Instead of playing it scary, played it as the encounter between a father and his son, who suddenly sees a person he wanted to meet and finally meets it. So with a gentle theme, something very pure and very tender. No genre music in this film, horror music, or it's all about, because it's all about the characters and their feelings, not about scaring the audience. That's jumping around.
It's why you're breaking your set. It's fine.
This is Frankenstein. But I'm not Dr. Frankenstein, but
definitely not.
No, okay.
It's fine. Don't worry. But that's really interesting because it's about the emotions of the characters. It's not about that. You know, it's not about how we want how the audience could potentially feel in this situation. It's embedded in emotion, and that's what's so great about it.
And there's enough action in the film because there are some violent moments and some scary moments, and sometimes the music follow that. You know, this energy, but most of the time it does not, and it catapults very well because it balances what can be bearable, you know, to watch.
What do you enjoy about coming back to work with Guillermo on a new project?
Because, I mean, this film, you know, like the previous one we've done, as you say, every detail, every collaborator, you know, Tamara, Kate, Mike, everybody in this team, Dan, cinematography, costume, production design, visual effects,
makeup
effects, you know, everything is so pristine, elaborated, sophisticated. I just have to watch and be inspired by what I see. And on top of that, you add Guillermo's vision, the camera movements, and the space that he gives to the music to play. Mm. Also, there's a lot of space.
Yeah.
So that's what happens with Guillermo. And he likes having music in his films. And he likes me to be able to say no. And he likes me to make him emotional, you know, when I finally find the tune or the melody that is right for a scene. I know that he always says, if I cry, I say I like it. So we have this mojo that goes through that kind of exchange.
It's a beautiful partnership, really, really is. It's
lovely. We have fun.
Yeah, it's great to chat to you about it. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Hazel.
From the score to Frankenstein, that's Symmetry by Alexander Desplat, rounding off our soundtrack and special on the film.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Huge thanks to both Guillermo and Alexander for taking the time to talk to me, and also everybody behind the scenes for facilitating those wonderful conversations. Now, Frankenstein is streaming now on Netflix and is well worth a couple of hours of your time. I've spoken to Guillermo and Alexander before, and you can find those conversations at edithbowman.com. If you aren't already, please do follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtracking UK, while our YouTube channel is Soundtracking Extra, and we would be very grateful if you would subscribe. There is loads of new content going up there this week. next up. Finally, going to share with you my interview with the wonderful Rebecca Miller about her documentary series, Mr. Scorsese. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.